Mutual presents Arch Oboler's Plays. The Mutual Broadcasting System has the pleasure of presenting the eighth broadcast of a special 26-week series of plays by radio playwright Arch Oboler. The play will be introduced by Arch Oboler.
You know, radio by and large is an ephemeral art. What happens drives across space and through your radio set and out of your loudspeaker and is quickly gone with the kilocycles. So the short play is especially fitted to the radio medium. Tonight, we had planned to go over motion pictures one better and do a triple feature. But 30 minutes can't be stretched, so here is a double feature.
First feature, a comedy, titled Ostrich in Bed. This is what happened to Mr. Bart Reynolds one evening when he returned from work, coming cry on his lips.
Jean, darling, I'm home.
I know you're home.
What's the matter, darling? Is it not cold?
Bart, listen to me.
I listen.
I tried to wake you up, but you weren't there all afternoon.
Oh, it's at the bank. Where is it, Jean? What's the matter?
Darling, I don't know exactly how to tell you this.
Tell me what?
Bart, you and I...
No.
No! No, what? All I want to tell you is...
Yes?
There's an ostrich in our bed. Bart Reynolds, all I ask you to do, absolutely all, is open the door and look in.
Come here.
Yes?
How long have we been married?
7 years. What's that got to do with
you? It's got to do with why I love you. Never a dull moment. Remember last year when I came home and you announced that you'd gone into the fur business with one rabbit?
Well, what's that got to
do? And the year before that, you'd gone into the chicken raising business with five roosters.
Bart Reynolds,
and the year before that, someone had given you a bee and a flower. You were going to corner the honey market.
Will you answer me? What's that got to do with this?
Well, what business venture is all this ostrich nonsense a preamble to? Now, come ahead. Let's have the truth.
Bart Reynolds, are you insinuating that I'm lying?
Oh, my sweet, my dear, my love. I'm only insinuating that it's after 6. Our dinner guest is arriving at 7. He's a man absolutely without a sense of humor. So let's have the joke. I'll laugh, and then I'll help you get the table set.
Bart Reynolds, you come with me.
Wait a minute. Stop pulling.
Come with me.
But where?
The bedroom.
Gee.
I'll show you. Here. Look.
It is an ostrich.
When I heard the sound of the door, I thought to myself, now who can that be?
I said to myself, now who can that be?
Oh. And I started for the door, and on the way I slipped and fell. So I thought, Miss Owens is absolutely no good.
Oh.
And when I got to the door, I couldn't open it because the lock was stuck. So I said, I'll be with you in a minute. And I had the slightest idea what was on the other side.
But
and when I finally did get the door open, there it was.
But I
tried to scream, but the scream stuck in my voice, so I just stood there and it just walked right by me down the hall into the bedroom and sat down on the bed. And that's all there is to it.
But, darling, people don't open their front doors and find ostriches there.
No, sir.
No, ostriches just don't walk into people's houses and sit down in their bedrooms.
No, sir.
It's preposterous.
Bart?
Yes?
Why don't you tell that to the ostrich?
Hello? Hello, is this the police department?
Yes, Sergeant Buchanan.
Well, Sergeant, this is Mr. Reynolds at 803 Catalpa Street.
803 Catalpa.
A very peculiar thing has happened here, and I wish to report to...
I'm listening.
Well, it's this way, Sergeant.
Say it,
Bob. It appears that there's an ostrich in our bed. That is to say, there's an ostrich in our bed.
I'm afraid we got a bad connection. What did you say?
I said an ostrich has come into our house and he's in our bed. Now, please, won't you send a squad car over here quickly? We're expecting very important dinner guests, and the ostrich ought to be out of here by the time they arrive. Sergeant? Hello, are you there?
I'm here, mister. Don't you think it's a little early in the evening to be feeling so happy?
I'm not happy.
He's not happy.
Who is that?
That was my wife. Look, will you please hurry and get some policemen over here and get this ostrich out of here? Sergeant, did you hear me?
I heard you. And I've one comment to make. There's a war going on. The police department is short on help. We're overworked. We're tired. And we haven't got any time for drunks. Now go stick your head in a bucket and stop bothering.
Hello, is this the Society for the Protection of Dumb Animals? I said, is this the Society for the Protection of Animals?
S-A-P-C-A. Can I help you?
Oh, you certainly can. You certainly can. Did you pick up stray animals?
Yes, sir. A dog or a cat.
Well, it's sort of a bird.
Male or female?
Well, I don't know.
I'm sorry. We must have that information.
Well, hold the wire. Joan, is it a he or a she?
Well, really, Bob, how could I know?
Hello? We don't know.
I'm sorry. We must have that information.
But it's a bird, you hear me? A bird.
I'm sorry. We do not pick up stray birds. Would you be interested in a nice dog?
I would not. Now, this bird, could you please...
We have a complete selection of stray dogs. The dog is man's best friend. Every home should have a dog. Would you be interested?
I told you. It's hopeless. We'll never get rid of that bird.
Listen.
What do you want?
It's almost 7. Mr. Talbot.
Mr. Talbot. Well, Bob, what do we do when he gets here? Tell us?
Are you out of your mind, honey? He's a stuffy conservative nincompoop who writes stuffy conservative newspaper editorials. If the police won't believe our story about the ostrich, what do you think Mr. Talbot will say?
Well, we can show it to him.
Indeed. One mention of this ostrich and we'll be in every newspaper in the country. I can't call off this dinner, honey. It's part of public relations. So there's only one hope. Get Mr. Talbot in and get him out of here fast.
Dinner? Oh, Bob.
Oh, Bob, what?
The dinner. I haven't even begun the dinner. Bob.
Hmm?
Do you think Mr. Talbot would be interested in ostrich on toast?
Fundamentals, my dear Renault. What this country needs is to go back to fundamentals. Agreed?
Yes, Mr. Talbot.
The fundamentals are simple living and simple food. May I congratulate you on your salad, Mrs. Renault?
Thank you, Mr. Talbot.
Yes, what America needs is a simple, peaceful way of life. Your way of life.
Thank you, Mr. Talbot.
Thank you, Mr. Talbot. Here you are, too. Self-sufficient. You, Mrs. Renault, capable of making a fine dinner.
I'll cook in a defense time.
Immaterial and irrelevant. You are capable of conducting your own family life, same day in the future.
Thank you.
That's all, Mr. Talbot. It has been my experience that the average American family has too much horseplay and not enough horse sense. The wild, unrestrained, so-called chivalry, the average American family, leads to family discord, distance, and divorce. Agreed,
Renault? Huh? Yes, Mr. Thomas.
The American home must once again become a quiet haven. What's that?
Woodpecker.
Things not woodpeckers.
Oh, yes. Where was I?
In the American home.
Oh, boy, the American home. It must once again become an institution. Self-sustaining, self-productive. An arsenal of lifestyle. There it is again. What is that?
The arsenal of livestock.
I can't hear anything.
Neither do I.
Well, I thought I did. But to continue. That to be self-sustaining, every home should make use of our feather frame.
Hmm?
Pigeons in the attic, chickens in the basement.
What about the bedroom?
I beg your pardon?
Mr. Coward, have you read any good books lately? I mean, about the American home? Just the other day, I ran across a book that said...
Just a moment, Reynolds. Listen. There's someone at the door. Well, aren't you going to answer it?
Oh, yes. Yes, there must be somebody at the front door. I'll go see.
Just a moment.
Yes, Mr. Talbot.
Sound is from that person.
Oh.
Reynolds, are you just going to sit there?
Hmm?
Aren't you going to find out who it is?
Well, I...
Oh, it's no use, but you might as well show him.
Show me what? What's going on here?
That feathered friend you were talking about,
Well?
We already have it, Mr. Talbot.
I beg your pardon?
Even when you see it, sir, you won't believe it, but there goes.
What is it? There she goes.
Look down the hall and hold on to your hat.
What?
But... Oh.
Is it an ostrich?
It is an ostrich.
Oh,
geez. Look out. He's got out. Don't let it get...
All right, Bob. Everything's under control.
What?
Mr. Talbot has passed out, and the ostrich is eating the salad.
Mrs. Reynolds?
Well, Mr. Reynolds?
Here we are.
Here we are.
Who writes your dialogue these days?
Oh, short, fat fellow without a head.
Tell me, Mrs. Reynolds, has anything amusing happened to you lately?
Oh, nothing much. Met an artist yesterday.
Anyone you know?
Tall, thin fellow with feathers.
Along the boulevard?
No, right over the salad bar. What's funny, Mr. Reynolds?
Well, at least we got rid of Mr. Calvert.
Yes. And I'm very sleepy. Shall I go to bed?
What bed, Mrs. Reynolds?
Bart, it isn't back in the bedroom again.
I didn't want to tell you before, but while you weren't looking, it's back into the bedroom.
Bart, throw it out.
And we've been through that before.
Bart, do you admit you're afraid of an octopus?
I admit I'm afraid of an octopus.
But I'm tired. I want to sleep. Well, I sleep.
There's always a sofa.
Oh, this is crazy. Call the police. Call the fire department.
Call the Society for the Prevention of Dumb Animals.
All right. But wait until it's morning. If I have to call out the wax, the waves, and the stars, out it goes.
Out it goes.
Bart.
What is it now?
In the morning, do you think it'll accept breakfast and dance? Bart, wake up.
Mm-hmm. What?
Chapter 7. Come on, please wake up.
Chapter 7. I won't wake up. Oh, you guys, did I have a dream?
I know. You dreamt there was an ostrich in the house.
Yeah, how did you... Oh, gee.
Yes, Bart, your dream is walking around the bedroom.
How do you know?
I looked in a little while ago. Feeling your shorts.
The plain or the striped one?
Bart, listen.
Here. Oh, Bob. Now, don't be pretty. After all, it's only an ostrich. And an ostrich is a bird, and the bird hasn't got any teeth, so why should we be afraid of an ostrich?
Bob, looking at you.
I think it's looking at you.
Bob, do something.
Hello, ostrich.
Oh, it doesn't like you.
Why do you jump to conclusion? It's just lonely, that's all. It's just from the zoo or circus or something. Obviously, it's a lonely bird.
It's got a head like a snake.
No. On the contrary, I think it's a handsome bird. Where are you from, old boy? Old girl? Look at the way it's trying to say to listen. Do you think it understands?
I wouldn't know.
Ostrich, I'm going to talk to you now, man to man.
Oh, bless you, Taylor.
Now, look, Ostrich, we're very appreciative about your frightening Mr. Calvert out of here, but believe me, enough. Now, surely there's a nice cage waiting for you somewhere. We're not a good family, but you wouldn't like our social life. People, we like people. The house is always full of people. Now, you like privacy.
You had me fall. Well, I shouldn't have said that.
Now, I've done it.
But, the way it's looking at it, it's as if it's trying to make up its mind.
Yeah, whether to stay or to go.
That's it, whether to stay or to go. Ostrich, listen. We're not the family for you at all. I can't cook, I can't sew, and I can't...
Stop that.
I'm just trying to tell it.
We're sane people, aren't we?
Are we?
I'm going to settle this thing right now. Right now.
Bob, where are you going?
To open the front door. Now, you blasted long-necked imitation of a feathered friend, get the devil out of here, do you hear me? Get out!
But it's gone. But it's gone.
What do you know?
It's there.
Quick, to the window. Look, it's crossing the street.
Climbing the stairs of the Johnson house.
It's tapping on the door.
But Mrs. Johnson's opening the door. And there it goes in. It's gone into the Johnson house.
God, it's strange.
What?
It had the wrong address.
You have just heard Ostrich in Bed. The leading players, Wally Mayer, Mary Jane Croft, Earl Ross, and the Osbournes. And now, the final feature of our double feature, a comedy titled Report to My Relative.
It's come to my attention that certain ones of my relatives are very worried about a certain person, namely me. It's come to my attention that certain relatives are saying that when I got off the boat that brought me back from the South Pacific after 4 years in the Army, including 3 years combat duty, all I had to show for it was sunburn, malaria, and no dough. With all these rumors and worries going around, I therefore wish to take this opportunity, like the politician said, to make a report to my relatives. Dear relatives in the borough of Brooklyn, I give you greetings, like the president said to me on my draft notice. I am now back in the United States as a returned serviceman, having been formerly with the United States Marine Corps, of which certainly even you have heard. Now I will get down to the subject in which all of you are most interested, biz, financial. The rumor is right. I got off the boat after 4 years in service, including 3 in combat, and I wish to state that my bankroll is flattered in the top of Cousin Eli's head. But before you snatch in the welcome mat, push the bureau up against the door and plug up the keyhole, leave and tell you a few more of the facts of life of your relative, Sergeant Moran, namely me. When I arrived in that certain South Pacific island due to certain events which took place on the transport going out, namely, certain very bad and unusual passes, I arrived on said island in a very bankrupt condition. This, you will say, is the familiar condition for one Sergeant Moran, but, dear relative, by this time, I'd been in the Marine Corps for 2 years. So I therefore cleaned out an old air drum, promoted a certain gas engine, and within a very short time, I, Sudsy Moran, was in business.
Foxhole laundry, such a specialty.
This may come as a complete surprise to you, my dear relatives, but I, Sudsy Moran, was an immediate success.
Yes, Major, I'll have the shirts for you in the morning. Okay, Captain, no starch in the collar. Fixing the holes in the sacks will cost you 2 bits extra, Sergeant. Okay, I'll turn the cuffs for you, but that'll be 4 bits, Corporal.
It started 2 weeks. I had to hire me 2 assistants. And by the time somebody in Washington pressed the button and said, transfer subject out of Guard, and I had to, like they say, liquidate business, I had 1,000 bucks cash in my kick. I got on that transport floating like I had clouds on my feet. 1,000 bucks. I was in the laundry business.
Come on, Snake Eyes.
2 hours on that transport and I was out of business.
Come on, Little Joe. No, make my point. Cleaned out the joint. That's all, brother.
That's all, brother. Having no more money, I was asked to leave the game and go stake my tent someplace else, which naturally gave me a lot of what you might call spare time in which to think. This thinking continued for 2 days, and by the time a very large bridge which belongs to San Francisco come into sight, I had it all figured out. First, what I needed was a samurai sword. In case you are ignorant, my dear relatives, which is natural, a samurai sword is used by Japanese officers when they're charging bonsai bonsai, and it's supposed to be a very slick article for the souvenir hunters, although personally I'll take a baseball bat any time. But, for reasons which you will soon note, I decided that I need one of these here samurai swords, and since I don't have one, I looked around, and I picked on Sergeant Milligan. First, because he has a very long sword which he's removed from a Japanese officer, and second, because he's a very sentimental character.
Hiya, Sergeant Milligan. How are you, old kiddo boy? It's Sudsy. You've done your shape. Remember?
Wow. Sergeant, it's come to my attention that you're the proud owner of 2 of them there Japanese samurai swords.
Is that a fact?
Yeah.
It's further come to my attention that you've turned down a sum of 25 clams for said sword.
Yeah.
From which I take it you're interested in making a much larger profit.
Yeah?
Sergeant, man to man, do you love your mother?
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what I want to talk to you about. Sarge, I have a small proposition for you. A small proposition. If you should ask me, my dear relatives, what my mother, who's been dead 10 years, God rest her soul, has got to do with a Japanese sword, I'll tell you it has nothing to do with a Japanese sword. But as I said, Sergeant Milligan is a sentimental guy, and when I leave the ship, I've given him the last thing which I owned in the world. There's a certain pair of earrings from Australia, which I've been saving for a certain dame on Firebush Avenue, who I discovered from a long-distance telephone call, waited all of 12 hours after I'd been inducted to marry a certain 4S individual waiting for the A&P grocery stores. In return for these here earrings, the sentimental sergeant's given me his extra Japanese sword, which I'm still carrying as I get off the boat in San Francisco, and which I'm still carrying when all the formalities have gone through very speedily, if I must say so, and I'm now a retained serviceman. So, I'm walking along carrying the sword very prominently, you might say, when a certain civilian individual comes up alongside me. Now, I can see right away that this here civilian is strictly legitimate, looking exactly like Cousin Harry, who, as you know, is a very hard-working and strictly legitimate. The time is now 9 o'clock in the morning, and my first day as a retained serviceman proper.
I beg your pardon.
Sure, okay, mister. I'm easy to converse with. What's on your mind, eh?
Is that a Japanese samurai sword you're carrying?
It is indeed, brother. It is indeed.
You are a returned serviceman, I take it.
You took it, Hank.
I suppose I shouldn't say it, but would you be interested in selling the sword? Oh, I know it's a terrible thing to ask. I presume it has a great deal of value to you, but I've always wanted to own a sword like that, and, of course, there wasn't ever a chance of my getting into this war because I'm over 40 and my asthma. Would you sell me the sword? Could you? Would you sell me the sword?
At 10 a.m., dear relative, this certain civilian who looks like Uncle Harry is the owner of one Japanese samurai sword, while I am now the owner of 10 bucks cash and one Model A Ford in very good condition, including a paint job and four very good tires in very good condition, due to the fact that this said civilian individual, amid gas and rubber rationing begins, puts the car up on blocks, drains the oil and water, and covers the whole thing with a dust cover like it was at least a Buick. It's now, as I say, 10 a.m. And I'm 1 hour return serviceman problem, and I got 10 clams and one Model A Ford with good rubber. But no gas. I call upon a certain gas rationing board.
And gentlemen, even as I was brought across the country from Brooklyn to save my country, take me, a grateful citizenry, will send me back to Brooklyn out of my work is done. Yes, I know. My government will send me back by train. But surely you'll grant me the privilege of taking back with me the one little possession of my whole life, my very own automobile. Gentlemen, as patriotic citizens, I have a small proposition to make to you.
At 11 o'clock of my first day as a retained soldier problem, I'm headed south on the coast highway toward Los Angeles in my own automobile, which has a very large tank full of gas. It's very nice. I observe the ocean. I breathe in a few lungfuls of air, which is strictly empty of malaria and other obnoxious diseases native to where I've been. And I'm feeling very, very good. At 11 o'clock, my stomach announces it's time for chow. I pull up to a very small hot dog stand, which is standing by the crossroads. In the hot dog stand, reading a very large book, is a very small girl, who the minute she opens her mouth, I think, where am I?
Good morning, Thursday afternoon. What can I do for you? We have anything you want as long as it is hot dog.
You're standing with my mouth hanging open like Cousin Harold, the one they had to put away.
Look, mister, haven't you ever seen a girl before?
You said you to live on DeKalb Avenue?
What's it to you?
Brooklyn. She's from Brooklyn. She's from Brooklyn.
At 12 o'clock sharp, I'm behind the counter helping this very nice character to wait on customers.
Okay, Annie, I guess we got them customers under control now, so come on. Give us some more of that life history, hey?
Well, so Pa takes one look at this blonde cookie and he forgets all about his great love for California and the business and me. And he cleans out the cash register and goes.
Oh.
So for 6 months I've been parking it here and that's it. I got relatives down in San Diego on my side, but who can get there?
You mean you want to get away, hey?
What do you think?
Annie! When people want to get away, how do they go? By automobile.
What automobile?
Annie, standing out there by the curb is an automobile that's had the fine tenor care of a good man and a good home. And because you're from Brooklyn and because I'm from Brooklyn, I have a small proposition to make to you.
At 1 o'clock sharp, I am owner of a hot dog stand on U.S. Highway 101, which is a very main type artery, runners from San Francisco down to San Diego. At 1:30, a very large individual who, if he was a woman, would be, you'll pardon the expression, a spitting image of Cousin Aggie, sits down at the counter. While he's munching on his sixth hot dog, complete with all the fixings, I engage in a little conversation.
How are the hot dogs, Victor?
Well done enough for you? Would you like some more onions?
Wonderful.
Should I like that? Mister, I just got back from the South Pacific, and I heard some mighty strange palaver down there, but I don't know what tribe you're from.
Sorry. I've been so busy these days, I always eat with my mouth full. I said you don't know how lucky you are. I haven't been down in the South Pacific.
Lucky? You tell me?
You haven't been here during the war. People, some of them would rather lose the war than a button off their shirt.
Shirt? What shirt?
Any shirt. Any assault. Yes, sir, you're lucky. What's wrong with you?
A little malaria.
You're still lucky. I got 3 ulcers. Mister, these aren't my sheets. I don't care what the laundry mark says. These aren't my sheets. Mine were for Kale.
Huh?
And all the time you know, and she knows that all the sheets she ever owned to her name were made from all flour sacks. So she takes you into small claims court and sues you for Kale. People.
Mister, are you in the laundry business?
Send me the pepper.
Yeah.
No, the laundry business is in me, up to here. It's not a big place, you understand. In fact, just a little hand laundry, but I just can't take it anymore. Why isn't my laundry back? Why didn't you darn my socks? You tore all the buttons off my shirt. You gave me the wrong bundle. Oh, my gosh, what a just peace and quiet.
Yes, sir. Is this here peaceful enough for you?
Yes. I could sit here eating hot dogs the rest of my life.
Mister, I have a small proposition for you. Mister, I have a small proposition for you.
Dear relatives, by 3 o'clock of that same day, I am in the laundry business. That's all. Like I said before, with all these here rumors and worries going around, I've been very happy to take this opportunity, like the politician said, to make a report to all of you. The laundry business here is even better than it was down in that Satan South Pacific Island. Because here, when a customer gets tough with me, rank don't go. Like you might say, everybody here's nothing but a private, not even PFC, so I get along fine. I already have $1,000 in my kick. And if any of you relatives back in Brooklyn get in trouble, just leave me know. I, Sudsy Moran, formerly of the United States Marine Corps and more recently a retired soldier problem, will take care of you. Until you get on your feet, I will personally do your laundry for 1 month free at half rates. Of course, dear relatives in Brooklyn, you'll have to make your own pickup and delivery. I will close this report by stating that my laundry is located in San Diego, California.
You have just heard Report to My Relatives, the leading player, Bruce Elliott. This was the second of 2 short plays of a double feature, written especially for radio by Arch Oveler. The music was written by Gordon Jenkins, and the orchestra conducted by Al Sack. Next week, we will bring you Mr. Obler's original dramatization of a new and very unique book, Names on the Land, by Mr. George R. Stewart. This is the story of the origin and evolution of the principal names on the land in the United States. With story, song, and music, this broadcast will tell you of the names of our land, the name, perhaps, of the place where you live. This will be the 9th in a special series of plays written, produced, and directed for the Mutual Broadcasting System by Arch Oveler. Broadcasting system.